If you're at least my age or TV land is programmed into your remote control, you're probably familiar with the 1970s TV series Beretta and its famous catchphrase, "Don't do the crime if you can't do the time." It's a good thing the show was set in New York City and not Indianapolis. Here a more appropriate motto might be, "If you can't do the time, you'd better pick the right crime," and even then, there's no telling how much time you might actually end up doing. Policy critics have long maintained that Indiana's criminal code is, simply put, out of whack. On paper, at least, swiping a kid's tricycle is no different from stealing a fleet of luxury cars. Someone who gets caught with 3 grams of cocaine within 1,000 feet of a school will probably do more time than he would for rape. And a convicted sex offender can reduce an 8-year sentence to less than 2 by earning a college degree while in prison. The reason such quirks exist, the critics say, is that Indiana's criminal code hasn't undergone a major revision since 1977. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll take the time to look at the politics of crime. We'll start, as we always do, with a legislative update from the StateHouseFile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
A handful of legislators and dozens of lawyers have spent thousands of hours working on a rewrite of Indiana's felony sentencing laws. Republican Senator Brent Steele says it's an effort to take a hodgepodge of statutes cobbled together through time and emotion and give them more common sense.
And our Constitution says that our criminal justice system must be proportional, and it had gotten out of whack. Some crimes that were more serious were actually lower than lesser crimes, so it did need to be rebalanced.
The proposal changes the state's system of 4 felony classes, now labeled A through D, and makes it a system of 6 categories, which would be labeled 1 through 6. It also requires criminals to serve at least 75% of their sentences. Now, most can get out of prison after serving just half. But Republican Mike Pence has expressed concerns that the bill is soft on crime.
I'm very interested in reducing our prison populations, but I'm interested in doing that by reducing crime.
Lawmakers are now working to make adjustments so the measure is more acceptable to Pence. But Steele says the larger goal is to make the system better serve the public.
We have a limited number of dollars, and we need to spend them on the people that we're afraid of as a society, as opposed to those who we're just merely mad at because of their conduct.
The General Assembly has until the end of April to find that balance, or must wait until next year to continue the work. For Indiana Lawmakers and the StateHouseFile.com, I'm Leslie Weidenbender.
Thanks, Leslie. Back in a moment with our weekly roundtable discussion. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. 4 locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
If the push for sentencing reform in Indiana were a convicted criminal, it'd probably be a poster child for recidivism, because it seems to keep coming back year after year. Under the auspices of the General Assembly's Criminal Code Evaluation Commission, various groups with a stake in Indiana's criminal justice system have spent 4 years looking for ways to update and improve the state's sentencing guidelines. That's more than twice the amount of time that someone convicted of burglary in Indiana typically spends behind bars. The commission issued its 375-page report last summer, setting the stage, it seemed, for the speedy passage of a major sentencing overhaul this legislative session. It's still likely that some version of that proposal will become law, but in recent weeks, Governor Mike Pence and the Indiana Department of Correction have thrown a few wrenches into the reformers' carefully laid plans, with concerns about being soft on crime and projections of an exploding prison population. Here to discuss the issue are Republican Representative Greg Sturwald of Avon, a member of the aforementioned commission, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and the author of this year's comprehensive reform package; Democrat Terry Curry, the prosecutor here in Marion County, the busiest jurisdiction in the state; and making a return visit to our program this session, Professor Thomas Stuckey, director of criminal justice and public safety programs at Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis. And I appreciate your being here for this discussion. Greg Sturwald, let's start with you. One of your colleagues who's been engaged in this same process for a number of years has likened this exercise to busting rock. Are you starting to feel as if you're on a chain gang yourself?
Maybe just a little bit. It's been a long journey. We've been, as you said, we've been working with this situation for about 4 years now. But we've had some great input from some real experts in the field in every aspect of the criminal justice system. You know, we started out with the Criminal Code Evaluation Commission, but a subgroup of that was the what they call the work group. That was it had the people from the Prosecutor and Attorney's Council, the public defenders, and it was headed by Deborah Daniels. And then they had three.
Who's a former U.S. attorney for the Southern District?
Exactly.
Of
so,
Indiana.
So obviously she came to the table with quite a few credentials. And then also within the working group, they had three other attorneys who dealt with the criminal justice system. So they spent over 1,000 working hours, man hours, doing nothing but evaluating every element and every line of Title 35 of the Criminal Code. And then they made recommendations to the Criminal Code Evaluation Commission.
And the work group alone, if I'm not mistaken, had more than 43 meetings, I think it was, so looking at, you know, over a span of a little more than a year looking at the issue. So clearly it's been studied. Why is it so tough? Let me ask you that. I mean, you've been a Marion County's prosecutor. Of course, you're in your first term, but you've been working in the criminal justice system for decades. And again, Indiana has been unable or unwilling to revise its code for upwards of 35 years. Why do you think that is?
Well, and I think, at least from my perspective, the first time that this was considered was in the 2011 session. And I think it was focused pretty much exclusively on sentencing reform. And from the prosecutor's perspective, we wanted to see a complete revision of the code. And so I think, you know, at that time, the Prosecuting Attorney's Council opposed the legislation that occurred at that time, again, because it was focused solely upon the sentencing component. And so when you're talking about then redoing a body of law that's been in effect since 1978 that covers every single crime, virtually every single crime in the state of Indiana, it is going to be a process. And actually, you know, I would anticipate that even if the bill passes, as we hope it does, in its current form, having an effective date of 2014, that there'll be the opportunity then between now and next session for all the stakeholders to have their input and talk about, all right, we made this progress, what else do we need to do?
That's going an
forward?
Interesting point. I was going to bring that up because, as you point out, if this is enacted this session, July 1st, 2014 is when it would become effective, which is an unusual approach to legislation. Is it just a fear of, you know, what the unknown or the ability to correct mistakes and therefore assuage concerns that prosecutors or others might have?
No, we did that intentionally. We understood the magnitude of this project, and there are so many aspects of it. And every time you change one little aspect of it, it affects another. So we wanted to make sure that we had as much input and as many eyes to go over this as possible. So that was an agreement that we all had, that we thought it would be best, considering the size of this project, that we would go ahead and pass it, let everybody take a look at it for a year, and not only prosecutors but defenders, but judges and the Judge Association and probation officers, everybody involved with the criminal justice system. We wanted to make sure everybody had a look at it to make sure that if there were anything that we wanted to revise and take a look at, that we had plenty of time to do so.
Not only in terms of the bill itself that it addresses, but in addition, from our perspective, we would also then want to look at crimes that are currently in other titles as well that aren't even addressed in the current House bill.
Because this only deals with
Title 35. Crimes that are within Title 35, which is the fundamental title of crimes, but there are crimes in other titles in our Indiana Code. Title 9, for example.
Traffic offenses. I mean,
Title 9 is drunk driving offenses and securities offenses in a different title. And so, you know, from our perspective, we would also then like to be able to take the body of this work and see how we fold those crimes into the ultimate product.
Thomas Stuckey, let me pull you in here because you study what other states do and what happens with national policy on these issues. And we're hearing that one reason this has taken a long time to reach this point is that it's very complicated, it's new. Does it really just come back down to that? Because you look at some of the neighboring states. Ohio, I think a year or two ago, did this, and it was sort of barely a blip. They altered their sentence structure. Is there something about the political culture in Indiana that there is a particular concern about the appearance of being soft on crime?
Well, I don't know that I can necessarily speak directly to that particular issue. You know, each state has its own political culture, and certainly the conditions within the state of Ohio or any other state are going to be very different. You know, the players are likely to be similar in many ways, but, you know, there's a lot of different things that come into this. So as far as comparing one state's political situation to another, it's difficult to make those comparisons kind of on the fly, if you will. But certainly when you're talking about this kind of a change, it is an absolutely huge magnitude of what you're looking at in terms of the potential ramifications. There are, in any given case that you would see coming before a judge, there are going to be numerous factors that they're going to be looking at. An individual may have multiple charges, they may have prior convictions, so how this will play out in terms of the specifics of any given case is not always that easy to project, and I think that's where a lot of the hesitancy comes in from people is projecting into the future how this will play out. And certainly the change in the criminal code, I think, is certainly long in coming, as most people would agree. The other question that comes up is then what changes does this make at the local level in terms of how those local jurisdictions, because nearly all criminal cases are dealt with at the local level, so then how do those local jurisdictions deal with things differently?
Well, not only policy and protocol differences, but funding. I mean, there's no discussion, of course, that takes place in the General Assembly, or very few that don't have a fiscal note attached, and I think that's certainly been an issue that I know that locals and sheriffs and those who operate county jails certainly have been concerned about, that it's not effectively a unfunded mandate, I guess you could say. If you, Greg Stirwell, had to identify one thing that really, I mean, other than the fact we haven't had a change in up until 35 years, is it the recidivism rates we're seeing now? Is it the belief that, you know, first-time drug offenders would benefit from more treatment, more community-based care? Is it the growth in our prison population? Is there one thing that makes you say, this is something we got to do?
Well, I think it's actually a combination of all those things. We're not reinventing the wheel here. Some other states have done similar projects that we've done, and they've actually been able to save building a prison. They've actually reduced the crime rate, reduced the recidivism rate by dealing with the low-level offenders at the local level. It's been successful in other states, and I fully anticipate it being successful here. The effect that 1006 may have on the locals may not necessarily be so much with the local jails, but it may be with the probation departments, who will be the ones who will actually be dealing with the low-level offenders and developing the correct and proper program to deal with these offenders to reduce the recidivism rate.
I mean, is that a concern? You are at the county level. You deal with these issues. If I'm not mistaken, I think drug cases, sort of low-level drug cases, amounted to 12,000 cases that went through court dockets in the state last year. And theoretically, again, we'll talk in a minute about whether some of those penalties will be enhanced and they might end up being felonies that are accompanied by jail sentences. But assuming they're misdemeanors, that means 12,000 offenders who would be released into the probation, the care of probation officers. Is our counties across the state prepared to deal with that? Is Marion County prepared to deal with that?
Not currently, not to deal with it adequately. And Greg is exactly right. And you know, from our perspective, and by that I mean the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, and I want to make clear I'm not speaking for the Indiana Prosecuting Attorney's Council. I'm speaking only on my own behalf and our office. But we clearly are on board with the concept of dealing with low-level offenders in an alternative manner. And so we have drug treatment court, where it's essentially a diversion for low-level drug offenders. And our anecdotal experience is that 75% of those individuals who go through a rigorous one-year program don't come back into the criminal justice system. But in order to expand upon those programs, we need more funding for probation, for community corrections, and the ability to deal with those low-level offenders in an alternative way.
And Thomas Stuckey, again, this is a multifaceted bill. I mean, it's 400-plus pages, even longer than the commission's report. I don't know how you got another 100 pages out of it. But But I mean, there is the, we've talked about going from four felony categories up to six to give more flexibility in charging, you know, cutting the zone around schools from 1,000 feet to 500, where there would be an enhanced charge and theoretically enhanced penalties. A threshold for felony theft, I think right now, anything goes, but there would be a $750 limit. Among those things, does something stand out to you as particularly compelling argument to do this from your perspective, or is there something I haven't mentioned or we haven't mentioned that you see as valuable in this bill?
Well, I think all of those things are useful in terms of changing, particularly in a recent study that I was part of for the data analysis work group of the Criminal Code Evaluation Commission. One of the things that we found was that there were a large number of cases where they were theft cases, where the value was a fairly small amount of value of the goods stolen. And so certainly that is something that I think changing that, particularly when you talk about inflation and those kinds of things, the value of goods is obviously much different now than it used to be. So I think that would certainly be one thing to take a look at. I think the other thing is that the research really does strongly show that targeted programs that are targeted to the needs of the offender, that deal with their criminogenic needs, the things that we talk about that are make them likely to commit another crime in the future, and that are at their risk level, that more serious offenders need more intensive programming and things like drug treatment courts. All of those things are absolutely essential to lower the recidivism rate, and in the long run do pay off, but they do require an upfront investment. And one of the things that we found in that study was that a number of the prosecutors felt that they didn't have as many options as they would like to have, particularly if we talk about outside of Marion County. In some of the rural counties, those options may not be as readily available, drug treatment courts, and among other things. Certainly, I think the expansion of those along with the criminal code changes would be very helpful.
Now, your bill came out of its first committee test unanimously through Courts and Criminal Code in the House. Same thing in Ways and Means, unanimous. Overwhelmingly supported by the full House, I think it was 80 to 13. Then, as I alluded to a moment ago, the governor said, you know, I'm not comfortable with these drug sentences. We, as he said, you know, we want to crack down or we want to reduce crime, not reduce sentences. Valid point, do you think? And how much of a change in that regard are you willing to see made to make this palatable for the governor in a manner that he's willing to sign it?
Well, in discussions with both the public defenders and the prosecutor association, we knew that there were some tweaks that needed to be made to the bill. We anticipated that, and that's another reason why the effective date was next year. We want to take another look at it in proportion to all the offenses within Title 35. But we've already made a little tweak. We changed the marijuana issue within 1006. It's somewhere in between current law and where 1006 was before. So I think that, and we all knew that was one of the tweaks that needed to occur. So that was done over in the Senate.
And it did emerge from that committee, I think, 8-1. So it's not as if there's a huge impediment here. And as we tape this, I should say in full disclosure, the bill has yet to go before Senate Appropriations, and they'll be looking probably at the fiscal app component that we alluded to a moment ago. But you're confident that this will prevail?
Oh, absolutely. I have every confidence in the world. I think there's just too much support from every aspect of the criminal justice system. Everybody understands that there are needs for this to be done, and with the support we have, I fully anticipate it being passed this year.
You know, I mentioned the other wrench was a sort of unexpected testimony last week in committee of the Department of Correction, which said that contrary to what the Legislative Services Agency projects, which is a slight increase from 28,000 to 30 and then a drop-off in inmate population, it's actually going to go up, I think, 70% within 20 years. I think Senator Brent Steele called it, what, ninja?
Ninja smoke.
Ninja smoke. I'm not sure what that means. In Bedford, that probably does mean something. Is this ninja smoke, or is that a concern?
I have no clue what ninja smoke is,
but I'm sure it's a Class D felony, I'm sure.
Not having the benefit of the Department of Corrections data or projections, I would need more information before I would rely upon that as some basis for taking the legislation in any particular direction. Because I think, you know, we've seen what we've seen over the last few years is different information. You know, Professor Stuckey talked about the data study group that he was a part of, or perhaps led, I've reviewed it, and I think it was driven. This is just an example from the standpoint of the assumption of a lot of folks that there were all of these D felons, lowest level felons, going in DOC. Well, I think anecdotally, what their research showed is that, to the extent that someone was in the DOC for a D felony, there's probably a very good reason for that they had committed multiple probation violations, or they had a very significant criminal history. And so I think we have to be very careful in terms of how we rely upon this information. And I think the most important point is what Greg has alluded to, and that is to make certain that we continue to have the input of all the stakeholders in this process.
Tom, so let me just ask you, your educated guess, does the prison population go down, or does it go up? And if it goes up, does that not defeat the whole purpose of this 35-year exercise or this 4-year endeavor by the commission?
Well, again, I would be very hesitant to make any comments about the Department of Corrections projections without having seen anything other than a public headline on it. There is a very real question as to what the effect will be in the long run, because as Prosecutor Curry mentioned, you have a number of individuals who have long criminal histories. They are serial low-level offenders. In that study that we found, there were very few low-level felons that were going to the DOC for their first offense. And so we wouldn't expect that. But the question then becomes, what are the alternatives that we have available to deal with that individual who, frankly, has difficulty following the rules as they're currently set?
You had one comment, and we are out of time, but if it's a quick comment, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, it's very important. Under 1006, we've changed the credit time. Now, under 1006, you'll serve 3 days to earn a day of credit time. Under current law, it's one for one. And that is one of the most difficult things to project.
So people serve 75% effectively instead of half.
But within the sentencing grid, we've now gone to 6 levels. The top level, which is the worst of the worst, we've increased penalties for them. But for the all other 5 levels below that, we have made it proportional with current law. So I do not anticipate an increase in the prison population. I think this is actually done in other states. In Texas, who did a similar model, actually poured $240 million into local projects, into drug addiction and mental illness, and they lowered their prison population, lowered crime rate, and lowered the recidivism rate, and actually saved $443 million.
All right, that's got to be the last word. Because of my good behavior, I petitioned for extra time for this discussion. Didn't get it. So the clock won't let us extend it. I do appreciate, though, the three of you being here for this discussion on an issue that clearly has a significant impact on Indiana. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Greg Sturwald of Avon, Democratic Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry, and Thomas Stuckey, Director of Criminal Justice and Public Safety Programs at IUPUI. In the last election, we heard that jobs were job one. How's that job going? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Ed, Mike Pence, why did he wait this long to get involved? It's not the 11th hour, but it's like the 9th or 10th hour.
Oh, we saw a governor get involved at the very beginning of this whole process and kind of setting the whole criminal code revision process in action. And even he saw that there were some
referring
problems
to Mitch Daniels, of course,
later on down the road. Right. And so Governor Pence took some time to see what it was that he liked and didn't like about the program here. But the more troubling thing, I think, to legislators is that he let his Department of Correction come in toward the very end of the process with some totally new numbers and without a whole lot that they made available to back up those numbers that contradicted the Legislative Services Agency numbers that they had been using to back up everything all along the way. And that really threw a whole lot of confusion into the process.
Did that undercut, do you think, the message that the administration was trying to send about, you know, we're unified about being tough on crime, having these numbers that some would say are sort of spurious math?
It may have done so, but I don't think that that was the intent. And I don't know that legislators looked at it, you know, that conspiratorially. I think they were just upset on both fronts. You know, one, that the governor was coming in toward the end here, and then two, that DOC was undercutting them on the numbers without giving them that backup data.
And who's more in sync with the average Hoosier voter? Mike Pence, who's concerned about entry-level drugs, marijuana primarily, or the reformers who say, you know, these drug offenses of that level should be misdemeanors and we shouldn't send those individuals to jail? Where's the Hoosier voter in this?
I think that they're probably more sympathetic to the governor saying, you know, we need to be reducing crime, not reducing the penalties. But I don't know that the average Hoosier really understands the total picture here and the questions about prison population and the explosion of the meth problem and what we need to do to try and keep some of these lower-level offenders out of the correctional system where we can to save costs and to prevent recidivism and to make them productive members of society again.
And tweaks notwithstanding, Greg Stirwall was very confident this is going to become law. Is he right?
Looks like it.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Thanks, Ed, as always. Appreciate your insight.
For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity and Bright House Network. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and the StateHouseFile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again at the same time next week. Until then, take care, or as Beretta might have said, and that's the name of that tune.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.
In the last election, we heard that jobs were job one. How's that job going? On the next Indiana Lawmakers.